Thank you. I just want to say thanks again to Joan and Jimmy. You guys were one of the first people to really give me a chance when I moved back to Pittsburgh from Ohio. So God bless. I really appreciate it. And Hemingway's is always weird because I read to the wall. Hi, wall. Want to quickly advertise this. This is a series called Strange Animals. It's a poetry. It's a reading series in Lawrenceville at Hambone's Pub. I will be reading with Andrew Sidlick, and this is billed as Two Blind Poets. So I heard about this last night, and I thought to myself, WTF am I going to read? So I figured I would warm up at Hemingway's here for this longer reading that I'm doing on Sunday. So guess what my theme is going to be? One brief definition before I start. These first two poems deal with a concept called orientation and mobility, and this is actually a special type of training that visually impaired people receive. It teaches them skills to enable them to move about literally, physically, in their environments, and rely on sensory details and such. So I'm only reading four poems. This one is called Crows, and it has an epic. This is from chapbook Borrow Bodies for sale after the reading. This epigraph says, mobility specialists have a set of strategies for helping children with impairments gain independence in the real world. Visually impaired children need to be placed in situations requiring them to solve problems. From the Institute for Innovative Blind Navigation. Crows. Each bead shines like an eye. Their glass sides click together in the valley of his palm. He plucks and tosses. As each one leaves his hand, it disappears. I hear them ricochet off bile yellow burlap walls, handprint turkeys, finger paintings, loose leaf haiku in stilted crayon. Mr. Charlie says, now pick them up. I suck my thumb, ask how many. He refuses to tell. Then the grind and creak of a classroom door released, a scrawl of bodies, vibrant, barely staying within the lines, sticky, curious. I know because my own body is like this, but not. They can cast their eyes in one direction, two beads strung on a strand. They watch me operate. My eyes shiver in their sockets, legs twist to protect my fragile balance. Saliva rims their lips, incisors ready to incise. Lithe bird beast bodies dive to trap the shining things swallowed by the corners of the kindergarten wing. No, thank you. Okay, this second poem deals with the same subject. The title of the poem is Amenie, and that's a girl's name, A-M-E-N-I-E, Amenie. I have lost us both in the center of our small city. We practice upon its grid-shaped streets because we hope for what may come eventually, independence. For me, this means escaping my parents, the school where I am bullied. When I look down at Amenie's olive skin, dark glasses, sleek hair, I want to ask her where she hopes to go when we're no longer here. Orientation and mobility is like survivalist training for the blind, and I have just fucked up the lesson beyond repair. I have lost us. I have lost our instructor. I am 13, and I am really in for it as soon as I solve this mess. To rehearse for normal life, I hold the city's grid in my head, memorize a sequence of lefts, rights, norths, and souths that pile on each other like Escher stairs. Except, I'm so tired. landmarks sequenced through my brain like odd-angled slides of a hell vacation, hot dog vendor, theater marquee, enormous department store where we had to ride the elevator to the top and take the escalators back down. Coffee stand, porn shop, many, many street signs. Someone has upended the slide tray, spilled my geography onto ugly pink shag. We duck into a bus shelter. Wind from an afternoon rainstorm does nothing to cool the shame that starts in my stomach and works upward to my throat. I'm the oldest. Even I, only child, know that the oldest takes care, takes the credit and the blame, oh, the blame. I'm trying not to vomit into a planter when Amini seizes the sleeve of my denim jacket. What now? I don't know how to appease little sisters. I look down into those dark glasses. I wonder if her eyes look like mine or if they do some other weird thing. Our instructor briefed me the week before that with retinitis pigmentosa, you went blind gradually instead of being born that way, like me. I don't wear dark glasses. I need all the sun I can get to light my jumping, whirling scraps of sight. I am supposed to see the world by scanning, moving eyeballs in a star-shaped 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 connect the dots pattern to form a picture of a whole from little pieces. But I cheat, have been cheating for years. The star makes me dizzy. I can only manage a frantic back and forth. I don't know, Amini, maybe we should wait here until he finds us. Our instructor is giant tall, easy even for me to spot in a crowd. I peer out, no instructor-shaped people in the long shot I aimed on the block. No way was I going to cry and blow my cover. Then Amini starts hitting me, anemic punches. I grab her arms, she wriggles free. You were supposed to know the way. Fair enough, I have fucked this up. I check down the block again. Still nothing. Still nothing. Thanks, guys. You make me feel so happy. Okay. I've recently started using a white cane again. I was supposed to be mainstream. I was mainstreamed. I was taught to use my residual vision, which is not actually that much. I can read this paper, but I can't really see you guys all that well. And this poem is kind of about reintegrating that cane into my life and what it means as a signifier. It's called Certain Seams. It's in 4 sections. 1. The boy pointed across the street and lisped. Now I know what they mean in books when they say, children lisped. Not so much about the sound of S, but how the vocalized consonants are sometimes not vocalized and vice versa. He wore a red and white striped t-shirt, pointed to my friend who was walking on my left. I always ask people to walk on my left. It's the eye that's not completely dead, I say, and they always move over. The boy pointed at my friend who had her blonde hair braided at the sides of her head, my friend who has an angular jaw and large nose that I covet. I want assertive features, a profile that says, I'm here. My face, my shoulders, even my arms fall palely into the air around us. But for my tattoos and white cane, I blend in completely. Black and gray ink hovers in the air in the shape of shoulders and arms, and the boy asks my friend, who has a wide mouth, freckles on her shoulders, her forehead, a question. It's the first day of summer, and she looks like summer sun at noon, my friend. I am the high white sky of winter. I fold into myself. You could look for miles and not really fathom me. The boy asks, can she see? I flinch but say nothing. Again, can she see? My friend says he's asking if you can see. I say, I know. I ask, should I answer? I don't know how to speak to children this small. Their manic pop and dodge through my visual field, the way they ask penetrating questions. 2. Speaking up Finding the right vibrations to make sound is like swallowing ice, clouds, outer space, articulating against a current, a watery pressure. I should be drowning. Instead, I... Certain seams crack and then billow open. 3. Increased occasions like this with the boy equals crying more after. I hate 1, myself, 2, everyone else. Sadness flows out according to my guru. I imagine secreting it like oil slick. To dive into the black river and never surface again. Recurring dream, speaking in synthesized voices, recurring dream, to breathe through the hole in my neck from where my head is missing, recurring dream. 4. What is the lifespan of a body that contains a melange of syndromes, the syllables of which seem to matter less and less, like the noise of being in the middle of a parade, like the color when all colors mix together? How can I gain the bigger picture? My professionals seem obsessed with this. They are also intrigued that I am so fascinated by detail. Like the way my nerves weave a fiery net. Like the way my professionals want my psyche to be smooth like metal on metal. Like the pain of this particular burning. Or the way this new cane tip rolls across the ripped up sidewalk. A little bit, I yell across the street. In my neighborhood, people assume the street provides no distance between us. They yell to me as if I'm right there, yet nowhere. I say nowhere because the child asks, my friend, can she see? And I don't know how to answer, and I want her to answer instead. All right, thank you so much, so much. This is my last one. This is called How to Wear Knee-High Lace-Up Steel-Toe Boots. I learned this when I started teaching. First, you want to take them home and for a few days practice lacing. Aglet, eyelet, aglet, eyelet, pull them taut, next row. Use a stopwatch or count the seconds out loud. Cotton laces are easier on the fingers, but nylon laces last longer. Blisters equal dedication. Though it makes your footstep heavy, the steel toe is important. Witness students slump outside a classroom. The door is open, fluorescence abuzz, but they do not enter. It's the first day, and they wait for the teacher to walk among them like a priest or a general to place her arsenal of knowledge on the teacher table. Then they may arrange themselves away from her line of sight. I wait among them unnoticed. I wait until nervous energy is primed to erupt in a declaration of 7-minute rule. And just as someone opens his mouth and murmurs, I steel toe, heel toe, right through his personal space, tall boots and tattoos, I have practically no sight. My vision extends outward from a single point in what is best described as a one-dimensional line, and there will be questions. I toss my jacket, leather, to the table. I say, just shoot. Thank you.